Welcome everyone to the Retail Corner podcast from Proxima 360. The purpose of our podcast is to bring a relaxed and educational environment to discuss the current retail landscape, best of breed products, and retail business best practices. You will always find us talking with business users, technical resources, and retail experts on how they are and where they are headed.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Retail Corner Podcast. I am joined today by Ram Venkatraman, and thank you for being here, sir. I can't imagine a better way to spend a Friday morning. So, yeah, Vin is. Good morning. Good morning. Ram, you're the CEO of Kibo, which is like a modular retail platform. You guys work with Coastal Construction, Ace Hardware. You guys are like all over the place with. All over retail. And so it's good to have you on the Retail Corner, man. Yeah. Good morning. Good morning.
Morning. Thank you for having me on the post. Excited to talk to you about Kibo and other things that you may be interested to know about me. So thank you for having me again on the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to try and bring in a little philosophy this morning, a little leadership, see what the Friday morning holds for us. And so just so if anybody's not familiar with you, can you kind of walk me through your CV? You've got a, 25-year journey in the software industry. Can you kind of hit some highlights for me?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm born and raised in India. I grew up in a town called Bombay, Mumbai these days.
I've heard of it. Yes.
And my introduction to the United States of all things was Bismarck, North Dakota in 1994. Ooh. When I first came here. So think about a kid who grew up in Bombay, never seen anything below 75 degrees probably. And I walked in October 1994 to a very cold and frigid Bismarck. So fascinating introduction to India, pre-internet days of any kind. I'm an engineer by training. I'm an electronics engineer by training. So started off in the software world, used to work for Unisys there, and then progressed to lots of other roles in engineering. And then I started my own company in 2000. It was a tools business this is pre-Web 2.0, just at the cusp of when Web 2.0 was just starting, after the dot-com crash, and then grew that.
What a great time to start a business.
Perfect timing. it was the dumbest idea to start the business at that time. But, when you're young, you really don't understand all those things. Worked out, yeah. I learned a lot. I always tell people, don't ask me how to build a great startup. I'll tell you what not to do. I know very well of things you shouldn't be doing. So ask me for that advice. From there, I transitioned. I felt like I needed to go into the business side of things. And this is something I'd always advise people who have aspirations to do bigger things than just technology and software. I took my first role at a company called JBoss in product management. JBoss, for those people who don't know, is one of the early innovators in open source application servers. Okay, cool. So JBoss today, JBoss AS, Tomcat, all of those things hibernate. Those projects were all in some shape or form influenced by JBoss. JBoss got acquired by Red Hat, stayed there for some time, and then decided, I had enough time working in horizontal platform technologies. I'd done most of that work till then. Decided to go into vertical software technology. So I started my first foray into verticalized SaaS platforms. Went into education, did that for a bit. Went into mortgage tech or fintech. Did that for a bit. And then back into education, there's a company called Promethean, which made electronic whiteboards. And then into hardware, which, my training was all in hardware. So bounced around at that space for about four and a half years. And then I moved to NCR. Felt like payment processing was fun. We ran global payment platforms for most of NCR's products, retail and hospitality. And then here I'm at Kibo. Right after that, I joined this business in 2018 to be the chief product and technology officer. And then most recently got promoted to CEO about 2 years ago. So if you look at my career trajectory, I have been in lots of different industries, roles, business side, as well as the engineering side of things. That has kind of really helped me understand business quite well in lots of different vertical areas. And having started my own company, I think that gave me a fairly good perspective in terms of the different areas. So I think that's one of the things that I always tell people, that retail, people stay in retail for long periods of time. I feel like a newbie many days. You know, 5 or 6 years in retail is a very new person. I was recently at Shop Doc, and pretty much everybody knows everybody in retail. It's such a small community.
It's a giant world, but a small community.
Yes. And I always tell people that, guys, you guys know so much more than retail than I do. And so it's some days a humbling experience as you learn more and more about the nuances of retail, which constantly changes. But really excited to be here at Kibo and the work we're doing here with e-commerce and order management.
Right. But so considering that you consider yourself a newbie in retail, is that you kind of have I've read some other posts and other things that you've done, and you kind of have a forward thinking philosophy when it comes to like prioritizing individuals and like that, building that right team. Where did that come from? Because you know, a lot of people are, it's all about getting things done. It's all about the end product, not the gears that make the watch kind of thing. And so where did that come from? And how has that contributed to like your philosophy, your growth?
Yeah, I won't take a lot of credit myself. I think I had great mentors coming through the ranks very early on, who kind of really emphasized team over self. You know, there's a fascinating book written by Patrick Lencioni, and you know, drilled into me by my mentors too, on two types of leaders, essentially, reward centric and responsibility centric. I think to be a good leader in today's day and age, or in my mind, any other time, reward centric people are, it's all about benefit to themselves, and responsibility centric leaders are all about, you know, risk and benefit to your team, right? I think one of my mentors really taught me early on is, hey, when you draw an org chart, don't put yourself at the top, put yourself at the bottom and your team above you, so you know who you're serving and who you're leading. And that kind of gave me a lot of kind of context early on in my career in terms of saying, okay, it's all about the team and it's less about yourself. And if you can really get the team successful, you will be successful by the result of their success. So that kind of morphed into this idea of, hey, I've got to make sure my team is successful, building the right team. You know, the famous Good to Great book that Jim Collins wrote, getting the right people on the bus is more important than the destination, right? So it's been kind of going through a lot of different iterations and making mistakes early on in my career and getting the right mentorship at that phase to say, okay, the team is important. And the other aspect of it is like, how do you actually, you know, find the right people, you know, groom the right people, grow the right people? And one of the things I always see is that as a leader, you know, you have to have a growth mindset in terms of saying, okay, you're going to make mistakes, take feedback from your own team and improve through that process. And then pretty much do anything and everything that you ask them to do. That's one of the things that it's extremely important. A lot of leaders I see, you know, they delegate, you know, they don't pay enough attention to the detail and sometimes can't even do what your team's asked to do. As a technologist, you just couldn't survive there. I mean, growing up in the engineering ranks, you would never gain the trust of your team if you couldn't do what you're asking them to do. So the kind of the core things that kind of led me to this concept over the years to say, hey, it's all about the team first. You know, it's all about getting feedback to them, from them, giving them feedback, really doing the stuff that you're asking them to do and be very detail oriented. I think that's the thing that most people appreciate. And finally, I mean, you have to be in a fantastic mindset to reward them and appreciate them. So we do a very interesting thing in Kibo. We have this concept of Kibo kudos, you know, okay. Channel that, you know, people give kudos to each other, you know, during the week. And then during our town hall, they read out those kudos to each other. Right. It's a fascinating experience. And it's one of my favorite moments. The last 10 or 15 minutes of a town hall is when our employees read out kudos to each other. And that's a culture building moment in an organization. Well,
the sheer fact that you're taking time on a town hall meeting with everybody there, yes, you're assigning importance to that. Absolutely. You know, you're And everybody in the room goes, okay, this is important. I need to be doing this. I need to be part of this. And it's, it, you get that adoption, which is so tough sometimes when it goes. I've been a part of companies where they have similar programs and adoption is key because totally. You'll have one person that writes 50 kudos and then 50 people that write one kudo.
And it starts with me as a leader, right? If I don't offer that appreciation to the team, then the team's not going to do that to other people. So it's spontaneous. People do it spontaneously after they have achieved something. It could be a small thing. Hey, person helped me fixing a ticket, or this person helped me handling a customer call. But if you did that effectively, then that thing kind of grows on its own. And then, you know, people follow that model. And I think it's really good for the culture of the organization.
It's that intangible that people are, everybody's looking for right now. And so,
In this remote world, that's an extremely important aspect. And that's, you know, we kind of adopted this during the COVID time, and it's really stuck and it's doing well for the business.
I think there are a lot of people that are discovering they're actually more productive remote, and they're more productive. They can focus on what's business important as well as personal important. And it lends itself to that balance. And so, like, you were talking about town hall meetings, you were talking about kudos and things like that. How are you? I know, like, with you starting your own business and everything else like that, you've got to have like an innovative mindset a little bit, at least a little. And so how are you encouraging innovation, like, within your team?
Yeah. So, you know, there's lots of things we do. I mean, all the standard stuff in terms of, you know, we get together on a regular basis, you know, have innovation sessions, conversations around that, in terms of, you know, we take a sprint or two in a year and allow people to go, you know, do their own thing and come up with ideas around that. You know, we have a very unique roadmap building process in the organization where, you know, we not only take, you know, ideas from our customers, ideas from the market, but we also ask our own employees, hey, what do you think are ideas that you want to add to the product, right? So we kind of refine this every quarterly, right? So we have a quarterly roadmap. We kind of forecast it out for 2 years, but then every quarter we sit down and discuss, okay, how do we go about and change what we're hearing from feedback? And an engineer might see something, hey, I'm seeing these 5 problems in there. I want to go solve for it, right? So we typically go take a lot of input from our own team in a significant way to kind of improve the platform and improve the product in the organization. AI is a big thing now. Everybody's talking about AI.
Of course.
All these concepts that everybody wants to incorporate in the platform. So we, you know, provide ways for them to go do it. Like, great example, somebody wanted to improve testing in the platform. They had a unique idea to go do it. We encouraged them to go build that, gave them enough time to go do that in the platform. And now it's getting incorporated into our core processes. So it's about listening to the team. It's about listening to what they want to do. And it's not always about the big picture. Hey, right. You know, I want to spend Gen AI. It's the small things, again, that's equally important in kind of encouraging those in the organizations.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be a podcast in 2024 if we didn't talk about AI. I think everybody, every conversation I have comes around that some way. But are you seeing the application of AI in surprising ways? Are you applying it in something that's more than just a ChatGPT, more than just something
We're doing it in lots of different places, right? I mean, all our engineers all use now GitHub Copilot in terms of being able to improve their productivity. We're seeing, you know, 10-15% improvement in engineering productivity from that perspective, where, you know, they're able to leverage tooling in there. Our marketing teams use that a lot as a starting point to kind of generate documents and, you know, content for the community. Again, that's a thing that you normally expect something like a ChatGPT to do that. But we're also embedding it a lot of into our product, right? So, you know, being a commerce platform, we have search capabilities in the platform. So we leverage large language models to be able to do better NLP searches in the system. Again, more traditional use case. And then what we're getting into more and more into is demand forecasting, right? I think being able to predict demand in inventory locations.
The crystal ball is becoming a little clearer, maybe?
A little clearer. I don't know whether it's all the way there yet. I mean, most people do it historical, but using other signals, right? I think from being a commerce platform, we leverage signals on the web, right? To say, okay, how many people have added this product to the cart? How many people are what impressions in PDP do you see there? Is it, you know, do you have a lot of abandoned carts in there? Is it coming from this specific location? So bringing all of those into the machine learning models to be able to do a better prediction of what should be there in what location, right? So whether prevent stockouts or provide a recommendation to the retailer to move products from one location to the other. So there's lots of use cases. I think, you know, being a, you know, software company that is still very young in the, you know, if you look at the context of other businesses, we really focus on a few areas, right? I think we can't go out and do 10 different things. These are two core areas. The third area that we focus on is kind of improving our catalog management platforms to be able to use Gen AI to generate product descriptions.
Okay.
Things like that that'll help a merchandiser to be able to do things more effectively and more efficiently. So those are kind of the areas that we focus on. But, you know, there's ideas, all kinds of ideas that people have. We have internal tooling to predict load on our systems during, you know, peak season. Hey, this is what happened last year. Let's figure out what happened this year with these clients. Can we project load into the platform? So there's other internal tooling that we do. But in general, from a product perspective, those are kind of core areas that we use.
So I'm going to ask you a kind of a strange question. I believe that imagination is what kind of drives innovation. You know, imagination, somebody has to think of it first, you know. And so, I mean, if Star Trek, you know, they all had communicators back in the day, and now we all have communicators, you know. And so is there something out there that you wish someone would invent? Is there something that like, man, my life would be so much easier if this existed?
Yeah. I'll tell you something that I'm struggling with these days, which is time. I wish there was a device that would just give me, not everybody else, a few extra hours a day, because if it gave everybody else, I would be back in the same boat. But if there's some way to generate more time, I would gladly take it because there's so much to do.
I'm working on cloning myself. I'm working on cloning myself. Yeah, so I can go fishing and everybody else can work. So.
I bet you the person who's working is going to call the person who's fishing and say, come back, I got more work.
That's 100% accurate. But well, maybe that's what AI is doing for us. Maybe that's, you know, we're not realizing it's saving 5 minutes of 5 minutes every hour kind of thing.
I don't have that. You know, I think there's tons of stuff in the press that AI is going to take jobs. AI is going to, you know, destroy life. I don't believe in that same philosophy. I mean, I've got young children. But I just don't know whether AI is going to do that. I think it's going to make our lives better. They're going to do different types of jobs, much like we've gone through this generation. Sure. Every generation of new technology, you tend to believe the same thing. It's going to take jobs away, but it lands up, you know, a better spot at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there's not a lot of people, like I live in Texas in the country, and a buddy of mine.
I live in Texas.
I live in the Texas Panhandle in Amarillo.
Okay.
And a buddy of mine he's a farrier. He redoes horse shoes and things like that. And I'm like, you're the only person who does that. Like, but 150 years ago, they were everywhere. And then it's an evolution of workspace. It's a different world, but I think that AI will open more doors than it closes. So absolutely.
I totally believe that. It's going to open up problems that we've never known about. It's going to allow us to problems.
Yeah, and stay positive, man. Stay positive. Stay positive.
Yes.
It is more doors to think about. Absolutely. So just to kind of get me back on the rails here. You are CTO of NCR. You said you were talking about payment stuff. Yeah, yeah. Is there anything that's on the horizon when it comes to like payment products or payment development?
No, I don't know that there's anything new that I'm a little removed from that in terms of day to day. But you know, it's such a fast evolving space, though.
When you were at NCR, like what kind of experience did you have? What did you work on when you were there?
Yeah, yeah. So when I was at NCR, we were responsible for, my team was responsible for running the core payment platforms that NCR had. So whether it's, in-store, primarily we worked a lot with in-store payment devices. So think about going to Whole Foods or going to a Target or going to a Publix, all of those, you know, retailers and grocery chains, when they would actually swipe in-store all those transactions were processed by the platform that I ran, or in a gas station, right?
So we ran
gas stations, we ran restaurants. It was a pretty intense, intense position because, you know, during peak season, and peak seasons are different in those things. If you're in the fuel business, it's summer. If you're in the restaurant business, it's, you know, it could be any time of the day, it could be an evening at a mealtime. If you're in a grocery store, you know, Christmas Eve is a, you know, really, really busy time.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Right. So it's different in different businesses, but, you know, people don't appreciate how much more complicated an in-store payment system is versus a web-based payment system, right? Where you typically often capture pretty quickly versus, you know, there's lots of things that can go wrong in a in-store system. You know, there's lots of fraud. You know, things go down. You might have a store that could be offline, but you got to still take orders in.
You got to still capture everything. Yeah.
It's a complicated thing. And then the system comes back up and then you got a massive load of transactions that are going back to the server. So it's a fairly complicated and a different type of a business than what an online business is. And obviously today with Omnichannel, you're like dealing with online and offline. We do that with Kibo a lot too. It's like somebody buys it in-store, but they want to return it in a call center use case or vice versa. I buy it online and I want to turn it in store. So there's obviously some level of complexity there and lots of payment providers are solving for it. So if I were to say that, I think that's a problem that's not been fully cracked yet. There's not all players who do it, but these omnichannel tokens are doing it. And there's some really forward-thinking payment providers that do it well, but not everybody's doing that well.
So given your experience, like with, because you've done B2C, you've done B2B, and you know, you've done e-commerce, you've done all that piece. And that's, like you said, it's coming closer and closer together. Everybody's customers are changing on a daily basis, whether it be the customer of B2B, the customer of B2C. Are you seeing all that, like that convergence come together? Are you seeing an opportunity there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the core things that more and more of our customers are doing are trying to do B2C and B2B on the same platform, right? Whether you're, even if you're a, let's say ASET or hardware is a great example. You sell to a consumer, but you also have a small, you know, plumbing business, small carpentry business.
Sure.
That may want to buy on the same site and they have different pricing and different promotions for that B2B account. Versus if they walked in as a customer or a consumer inside the store, the same experience is now, you know, reflected on the online experience. So if I log in as a person and I'm a B2B user, I need the B2B experience. If I log in as a B2C user, I need the B2C experience, right? So is kind of bringing and marrying those experiences, but then that experience needs to be what you're used to on the B2C side, right? So the notion of can I get a better price because now I've been I'm a business. I guarantee you a certain amount of dollar amount for you on a monthly basis. Give me a better price than a consumer would get, right?
That's the number one question. Yes.
That's the number one question. Or if I'm a, let's say I'm a residential, you know, business that has apartments and I have 1,000 units in there and I'm constantly fixing things. You might want even better terms than what a normal consumer would get. But I want to negotiate with you. I'm going to buy 1,000, you know, cans of paint. Can you give me a better deal? So it's that the buying experience for a B2B user is slightly different, but actually getting more and more closer to what a B2C user would see in terms of the web experience, right? I can search, I can find products, I can create them in a wish list, I can put them in a cart, create a quote out of that cart. Like these things are coming together from an experience perspective. And just at Kibo today, we think mostly about customer experience. Everything that we do is about focusing on.
Oh, sure. Everybody's doing it. That's the main focus across the board is yes. I mean, those pesky customers, you know? So,
yes.
Perfect. Okay. So we're running a little bit short on time, but I want to get your cut on this. Is it, if for someone like aspiring to kind of follow the same career path as you, like go in, kind of have a little bit of innovation in their life, have a little bit of, and end up being, being a mover and shaker in this industry, what advice would you give them, basically?
Yeah, I mean, I think
they're just starting out.
Yeah. I think I would say, you know, one of the key things is to be very curious. try a lot of different things. I think, you know, curiosity is the most important thing. If you want to learn something new constantly, you know, the classic things, I'm a lifelong learner. People talk about it, you know, but it starts with curiosity. If you're not curious about new things, it's obviously going to keep you stagnated. You're going to have a growth mindset in terms of being able to say, that's one of our core values at Kibo, like learn and ask for feedback and learn from those opportunities that are there. You're going to make mistakes. It's part of life. But if you're not curious, you're not trying something new, you're not going to make those mistakes. So I think those are the things I went through in my career. And then seek mentors. I think that's the key thing. There's lots of people who have done the same thing, made the mistakes in the past. I was very fortunate, you know, people really helped me out in my early days of my career. But a lot of it is also me seeking them out and asking for help. So one of the things that people ask me, hey, what are your more proudest things in your career? It's always about the people I've mentored and help them move forward in their careers, you know, make some of them my peers today. So that's the key part, is that, you know, there's lots of people who want to give and help. But as a young person, if you don't go ask for that help, sometimes, you know, you're trying to figure it out yourself. You know, I always tell people, don't make the same mistakes I make, make something new. So that's what a good mentor
make different mistakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah. Is to ask for help. Like, it's just really, even if it's not, the person doesn't know the answer, just talking through, working with them, you might come up with the answer yourself. So it's important to really work in the community, really understand and seek out help from others. I'm always open. If anybody's interested who are listening to your podcast and sharing my experiences, happy to do that. But I think that's a key part, is to really get help from others too along the way.
I think that's a perfect advice, my good man. And so, that's perfect way to end our podcast. I appreciate you for being here. This is it's been educational for me, and I hope a good listen for everybody.
Thank you so much, Cole. I appreciate your time.
All right. We'll have all of your links below and everything. And hopefully you get 50 people reaching out to you for mentorship. We'll see.
That'd be good. It'd be awesome.
All right. Thank you again, sir.
Appreciate it. Bye.
If you would like to be featured on our podcast, please email us at podcast@retailcorner.live or visit our website, retailcorner.live. Looking forward to having you as our guest on our podcast. And thank you so much for listening.